This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa News Tonight. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carol Van Dam, and here's what's coming up.
President Julius Maada Bio has been duly elected as president with 56.17%, whilst his main opponent, Dr. Samora Camara, getting 41.16% of those votes.
Journalist Eric Kawa updates us on the latest in Sierra Leone's presidential election. Also, aid workers say Sudanese refugees face abuse in Chad. And the son of Zambia's former president is arrested on corruption-related charges. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Sierra Leone's Electoral Commission has declared incumbent President Julius Maada Bio the winner of Saturday's hotly contested presidential election this past hour with a little more than 56% of the vote. That means Bio will not have to face his main rival, Samora Camara of the All People's Congress Party, in a runoff. Vote tallying had been disputed by the APC throughout the process, saying there was a lack of transparency. They weren't alone. Some election monitors issued similar statements before the final count was announced. I spoke to reporter Eric Kawa a short time ago while he was at the election hall in the capital, Freetown, where the results were announced.
I'm still at the elections hub at Freetown, Sierra Leone, Bintoumani International Conference Center, where the Chief Electoral Commissioner, Mohamed Kone, has made the announcement. And according to that release, President Julius Maada Bio has been duly elected as president with 56.17%, whilst his main opponent, Dr. Samora Camara, getting 41.16% of those votes. So he has been declared as the president by the Chief Electoral Commissioner.
Now, this news is just happening and you're just getting the results, I realize. So has there been any reaction yet from the All People's Congress Party or just people that you can see out on the street? I know you're not outside. You're still in the elections hall there. But do you have any sense of what's going on outside?
Well, I haven't been able to get that yet as to what's happening outside. But what I can tell you is that the hall, immediately that announcement was made, we heard supporters of the ruling party singing and chanting his name and or the name of the president. And also, I couldn't get any stuff from the opposition today. But then it could be recalled that late yesterday, after the announcement of the 60%, they had a press statement in which they said that their staff were not given the access to participate in the process and also to verify the results, in which they said they would not accept those results, and they called on the Electoral Commissioner to stop giving any results. And also we saw different observer missions who have been, you know, giving their different opinions and observations as to what exactly they have seen with the whole process. We saw the European Union yesterday giving their own report. They raised concerns. We also saw, again, National Elections Watch, which is one of those very big national observer mission in Sierra Leone here. And they also had their own press statement that was also released earlier today. So let me just quote from exactly what they were saying. In a paragraph or dated today, 27, they said, for the 2023 elections, new trained and deployed over 6,000 observers. But there's another place where they say, however, the new, which is National Elections Watch, affirms that the ballots have not yet been counted. And based on their PRVT findings and the ECSL data announced thus far, they are confident that once all votes are counted with integrity, voter turnout will be 77.3% directly quoted from them, plus minus 1.7% between 75% and 0.4% and 79%. And no candidate will reach the constitutional threshold of 55% of votes cast in the first round. That is according to that press statement dated today, 27, by the National Elections Watch.
So if these election monitors are more than one are saying that they have raised, you know, concerns about the way the election was carried out and the way that the vote tallying is being counted, and we haven't really heard yet what the All People's Congress Party is saying in reaction to this, in which they would have lost the election. But are you hearing anything from people outside? Could it mean that the general public will not accept the results either?
Checking now from the Facebook page of Dr. Samora Camara, they had a live press conference about an hour ago. I can't get the full details of what exactly was in that press conference. However, I know they will definitely, as you have said, they will definitely come out with certain information or maybe press release that they would give out in terms of giving their own position as to what they make of the announcement. So we're looking forward to seeing what exactly that will be.
Has the government urged people to remain calm?
That happened yesterday with the president's statement immediately after they announced that result. President Bio was on live where he called on individuals to remain calm and wait on the ECSL to announce the results. As of now, much have not heard, but monitoring our Facebook post, you see SIPB supporters out in the street and heading towards Shaka Stevens Street. That is what I'm monitoring right now on Facebook, and definitely we're waiting to see what exactly they would say. It's just too early to give more details.
That is reporter Eric Kawa. He was speaking with me from Freetown this past hour. You'll find updates on the Sierra Leone election on voaafrica.com. Authorities in Zambia have arrested former President Edgar Lungu's son and daughter-in-law on charges of money laundering and possessing property believed to be proceeds of crime worth more than $5 million. Lungu's Patriotic Front Party has described the move as continued persecution of Lungu's family by the government. Kathy Short reports from the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
Police spokesperson Ray Hamonga told VOA on Tuesday that Daliso Lungu and his wife Matilda have been arrested in their capacity as directors of Saloidi Traders Limited. He said they are accused of owning 69 motor vehicles and other properties believed to have been proceeds of crime. Hamonga outlined the charges.
Police have arrested and charged Daliso Lungu, age 36, and Matilda Likando Milinga, age 36, for the offense of possession of property suspected to be proceeds of crime, contrary to Section 71 of the Forfeiture of Proceeds of Crime Act No. 19 of 2010. Daliso Lungu has also been arrested and charged for the offense of money laundering. The duo have since been released on police bond and will appear in court soon.
The arrest came a week after Zambian authorities announced the seizure of some 20 properties linked to Daliso, former President Lungu's wife Esther, and daughter Tasila. Brian Mundubile, one of the lawyers for Daliso and his wife, confirmed the arrests and charges. Mundubile also confirmed Tuesday on WhatsApp to VOA that his clients have since been released on bail pending a court appearance soon. He added that the Lungus should be accorded the dignity of their status as the former first family. Mundubile described his clients' arrest as unnecessary actions meant to harass them. He said the government must be clear about their intentions regarding the family instead of embarrassing them. Mundubile notes that the arrests have caused pain and anger to the Lungu family and does not think this is the way for the state to go. The Zambian president of anti-corruption group Transparency International, Sampa Kalunga, says his organization has been following with keen interest cases that have to do with corruption, especially cases involving the Lungu family and former officials in Lungu's government. He adds that the law enforcement needs to follow through on the cases to the end.
As much as we applaud this, but at the same time, we would want to make a caution to the law enforcement agencies that they do a good job on investigating, on gathering evidence so that we do not see cases which only end up at either seizing property or being thrown or withdrawn by the courts.
The acting president of Lungu's Patriotic Front Party, Given Lubinda, addressed party members in Lusaka on Tuesday and advised them to brace for more arrests of Patriotic Front Party members. He accused authorities of only focusing on PF members in their fight against corruption.
We have a team of lawyers who are ready to defend us. There are even other lawyers who are coming on board to come and join the team of our lawyers to defend you. So don't be cowed. Continue to organize. Continue to mobilize the party. Don't be scared. Zambia is for us all.
Current President Hakainde Hichilema has said multiple times that the fight against corruption is not meant at political opponents, but is meant to protect the country's public funds. Kathy Short for VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
Gabon's government today said it will hold presidential, legislative, and local elections on August 26th. The French news agency AFP reports President Ali Bongo Ondimba has not yet said whether he will stand again, but he is widely expected to run for re-election. He's viewed as the favorite to win against a divided opposition. His Gabonese Democratic Party holds strong majorities in both houses of parliament. In 2009, Bongo took over from his father, Omar Bongo Ondimba, who had ruled the country for 41 years. AFP says the opposition has failed to agree on a single candidate for the presidential election, leaving about 15 candidates to announce their intentions to run. Fighting is being heard in Sudan's capital, Khartoum. Despite a unilateral ceasefire, the leader of Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces, or RSF, announced today, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, declared a two-day ceasefire for the Muslim holiday of Eid al-Adha. He also promised to prosecute members of the RSF who commit violations against civilians in his now 11-week-long fight with the Sudan army. VOA's Nabil Biagio in Washington has more about Dagalo's ceasefire declaration.
In a recording released Monday, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo declared his forces would observe a ceasefire for Tuesday and Wednesday, the eve of Eid al-Adha and the first day in the three-day Muslim festival.
I greet you during these blessed days of the month of Zulhijjah and ask Almighty God to restore security and stability in our beloved country. We declare a natural ceasefire for Tuesday and the first day of Eid al-Adha, except in cases of self-defense. I wish these days offer a chance at forgiveness and reconciliation among all components of our nation.
So far, the military has not commented on the unilateral ceasefire. Dagalo acknowledged the suffering of the Sudanese people as a result of his rapid support forces' battle with Sudan's army and said he hopes Sudan will emerge from its current crisis stronger and more united. He also addressed widespread reports of human rights violations his troops are accused of committing against civilians in Khartoum, Darfur, and other parts of the country.
We are closely monitoring all the violations being committed against innocent civilians by all parties, but specifically by our forces, including reports and allegations about looting. These violations go against the laws governing the Rapid Support Forces and the directive of its leadership. The RSF will take serious and decisive measures to address such violations.
The United States, the United Nations, and other governments have expressed concerns about reports that the RSF and allied militia have engaged in sexual violence, looting, and targeting of civilians in Darfur and Khartoum. Dagalo says those in his forces who have committed rights abuses will be prosecuted.
We firmly assert our rejection and condemnation of all violations committed against civilians, including those allegedly perpetrated by members of the RSF. We have therefore set up a special committee led by Major General Hussam al-Din Salih Fidel, the head of the field court. This committee enjoys full authority and has already begun its work in Omdurman, conducting on-site trials for individuals accused of committing violations against civilians.
Sudan's conflict between the army and the rapid support forces is in its 11th week. The United Nations estimates that 2.5 million people have been displaced from their homes and thousands have died since mid-April. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
The United Nations says in Sudan's western Darfur region, conflict and unrest have sparked sexual violence against women. Many who fled the region to neighboring Chad say there has been a complete breakdown of law and order, allowing for more attacks on women to take place. Henry Wilkins speaks to survivors of sexual violence in this report from Kafroun, Chad.
This woman, whose name VOA is withholding to protect her identity, fled Darfur when fighting broke out in her hometown of Tindelti. She says men from the Janjaweed, an armed group of mostly Arab origin who victimised black Sudanese, entered her home where she and her sister were sheltering from fighting. She says the men raped her and her sister. Muna Malik is a gender equality activist from Darfur. She has been recording cases of rape in the region of Sudan since Sudan's civil war began on April 15th, triggering widespread intercommunal violence. The war involves two rival generals locked in a power struggle. She says many civilians have been killed, men, women and children alike. There have been robberies of public properties and buildings burned. She adds that among all of this, women and girls have been raped too. Malik says she has recorded 11 cases herself, but this is likely just the start. The UN has said it is gravely concerned about reports of sexual violence, including rape, against women during the Sudan conflict. Because most investigators and journalists have been unable to access Sudan since the conflict started, it's difficult to know the extent of the crimes. This is important because the UN differentiates between isolated cases of rape during wartime, which is punished in a domestic criminal context, and widespread systemic rape, which is considered a war crime under international law. This could mean leaders of any side that is engaged in systemic rape could be held accountable. Asked if there is evidence of systemic rape in Sudan, Sarah Douglas, Deputy Chief of UN Women, told VOA.
So the verification of these cases, which is ongoing by the United Nations, will help to establish the patterns that exist. There's certainly the pattern of the cases being widespread, of them happening around the different conflict areas, be that in Khartoum or in Darfur.
Although health workers in Sudan have already cited cases of rape, and women caught up in the fighting have expressed fear on social media, a lack of social services for survivors and the stigma around coming forward could mean many cases are not being reported. The UN Population Fund's deputy representative for Chad, Elsie Kakam, said she recently met around 10 girls at a refugee site on the Chadian border.
The adolescent girls pregnant in this group of newly arrived people, all of them are around 15 and 17. That was the average age I have. I wanted to understand if they were with their husband, but none of them could show me a husband, which means these girls were victims of something we may not identify for now, because people here will not easily come out. They went rape.
The survivor, interviewed by VOA, says her sister is now pregnant as a result of rape. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Kafrun, Chad.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Nigeria accounts for about 33% of the 300,000 children diagnosed every year of sickle cell disease. The World Health Organization and Nigeria's health ministry says 25% of the country's total population are carriers of the gene mutations that give rise to the disorder. In 2011, Nigeria's health ministry initiated mandatory screenings for newborns to help detect the condition early. But as Timothy Obiezu reports, many Nigerian hospitals have yet to comply with that directive.
6 years ago, Anna Ochigbo lost her sibling to sickle cell anemia. 1 year later, another one died. Ochigbo said the pain was unbearable and she wanted to help spread the word about the genetic condition. In May 2022, Ochigbo launched the non-profit Hoplite Sickle Cell Foundation in memory of her siblings. She says the non-profit has been making an impact.
We don't just create awareness on, you know, the importance of genotype testing before marriage. We also go as far as conduct free genotype testing in certain communities so people can get to at least even know their genotype. And we also try as much as possible to educate young people.
About 50 million people are estimated to be living with sickle cell disease globally, but Nigeria has the highest burden. Every year, an estimated 100,000 kids are diagnosed with the condition in Nigeria, according to the health ministry, and up to 80% die before they turn 5. Hoplite's Foundation holds periodic hangouts for sickle cell warriors to meet and share their experiences.
The participation has been really, really massive. A lot of sickle cell warriors are coming out now. They want to connect, they want to network, they want to go to a place where they feel loved and appreciated.
Nigerian authorities in 2011 initiated universal screening for newborns at hospitals to help detect the condition early. But the health ministry's sickle cell program manager, Alayo Shopekon, says many health centers are yet to adopt the measure.
Every single child born in Nigeria should be screened for sickle cell disease at birth. Now, we have a much more refined and evidence-based technology. We have started training health workers.
Experts say apart from screening newborns, authorities need to intensify community genotype testing to help create awareness about the disease and to dispel myths and misinformation about the condition, including that the disease is a spiritual attack on the body. Nigerian musician Excel Praiseworth has been living with sickle cell disease for 29 years. Last year, he started a non-profit called The Sickle Sound, where he uses his music to debunk misinformation about the condition.
We've been writing songs. We have the Sickle Song, which has gone far and wide. And it's beautiful to know that warriors can listen to this song and have solace. Nigeria and then the world at large should just get rid of unnecessary stereotypes.
In 2021, Nigerian lawmakers introduced the bill to screen couples before they get married, but the bill was later suspended due to rights issues. As Nigeria joins the rest of the world to mark World Sickle Cell Day, advocates are urging authorities to take interventions about the condition more seriously if the negative trend must improve. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
More than a million faithful prayed today at Mount Arafat in Saudi Arabia at the height of the annual Hajj pilgrimage, one of the five pillars of Islam. The pilgrims pray all day at the site where the Prophet Muhammad is said to have given his final sermon. After sunset, they travel to Muzdalifa, where they will sleep in the open air. Afterward, they will return to Islam's holiest site, Mecca's Grand Mosque, where they will circle around the Kaaba, the giant black cube that Muslims pray toward each day. The French news agency AFP says the Saudi government reports about 1.8 million Muslims took part in this year's Hajj. The number represents a recovery from the lows of the past couple of years when numbers were restricted by COVID. However, that number falls far short of Saudi predictions of more than 2.5 million pilgrims. Around the world, Muslims are preparing to celebrate Eid al-Adha, the Feast of the Sacrifice, tomorrow. It marks the day when the Prophet Abraham prepared to sacrifice his son to Allah, who instead sent a ram to be sacrificed. Muslims are expected to perform the pilgrimage at least once if they are able to. In an exclusive report, Reuters News says a draft Security Council resolution proposed by France would end the United Nations peacekeeping to Mali on June 30th, referred to as MINUSMA. Under the draft resolution, UN personnel will stay until the end of the year to allow for a transition, during which MINUSMA activities will be pared back, including key support to Malian soldiers. The peacekeeping force also has protected cities that are surrounded by militants, provided medical evacuations for Malian soldiers, and has flown government officials across the country to avoid driving in conflict zones. This month, Mali's foreign minister, Abdoulaye Diop, asked the 13,000-strong force to leave without delay. Some experts fear the security situation could worsen when the mission departs. The 15-member Security Council is due to vote on Thursday of this week. Reuters says to be adopted, the resolution needs at least 9 votes in favor and no vetoes by Russia, China, the United States, Britain, or France. And that wraps it up for this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, please visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbil Yabaro, and our engineer, Atreus Regis, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station. Say.